I don't understand how a man with your hands needs a phone so small. It's...
Welcome to Bad Voltage. This is show 42 of episode 2, and I'm here with my co-presenters. Now, I got into trouble on our Slack channel for apparently not calling you by your real names. I said season 2, didn't I?
Really?
What did I say?
Episode.
I didn't hear you. I honestly wasn't listening.
For goodness sake. So,
and welcome to another inauspicious beginning of Bad Voltage.
Supposed to call you by your proper names... So I'm here with Jeremy Garcia and Jonathan Edward James Bacon. So,
thank you once again. Appreciate it.
What can I tell you? I got into trouble on the Slack channel because apparently I don't call people by their real names. So there you go.
What did you call us in the last episode?
I don't remember.
What was the not real name?
I'm assuming it was just abusive.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Baconio.
Probably that. Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
I find it very demeaning. So, whoever that person was, I appreciate you you defending our good natures, because he's a monster to work with. Shall we just talk about news until Jeremy gets kicked out of his meeting room?
Do it. Who wants to start?
Datadog HQ, the heavies at Datadog HQ are keeping a keen eye on tiny, tiny Jeremy Garcia. All right.
You start. You start, me? Mr. Bacon. Go for it.
So, apparently, Samsung have unveiled the long-rumored new foldable phone.
This is stupid.
So, apparently the screen is 4.58 inches, which is about the size as Stuart's Z5 Compact at 4.6 inches, apparently. That was written in the show notes. I can't verify that.
Literally the only good thing I can see about this phone is if you get some huge, great big phone and then fold it in half, it becomes a proper size phone. This thing is literally, it's got almost exactly the same screen size as my actual phone, and it's folded in half. It's nuts.
The thing I don't understand with this is what the point of it is, right? I get that, you know, if you, like, I absolutely see this, that you can have your phone, and then if you want to, for example, watch a video or something along those lines, then having the bigger screen is great. But what you do in that situation is you buy a Pixel 3, which has already got a big screen, and then you have to unfold it. But in this case, is this designed for people doing productivity on their phone? Who wants to take the phone out of the pocket and then unfold it to be able to use it? It just seems ridiculous. Well, it's not a Nintendo DS.
I look forward to the point where you can just fold the laptop 4 times and it turns into a phone.
I would very, very
you
much
You could do one
like,
of those things where, you know...
Yeah, I want a laptop where I can just fold it up into like a little postage stamp and then put it in my pocket. That would be brilliant.
I don't understand how a man with your hands needs a phone so small. It's you don't have like child hands. You don't have Donald Trump hands, right? You've got, I mean, they're not proper adult hands, but they're still like an actual adult human's hands. Like, why do you want a phone so small? It makes no sense.
So I can reach it for a start. One of the things I thought that was interesting about this foldable phone is, as far as I can tell, no one's actually really seen the thing itself, right? Samsung put out an infographic about it, not even pictures of it, and no one's been allowed to play
it. No, they had an event, but they just dimmed the lights and had a weird case.
Yeah, but people can go up and touch it and play with it, as far as I could tell.
No.
No. So right. The impression I have is that this is not actually a product. It's kind of something out of their R&D lab. Now, I admit, specifically me, had a go at companies for keeping everything secret and then wanting a big launch event. But this seems like swinging the pendulum rather too far in the other direction, announcing a thing which is not even close to being a product, as far as I can tell.
Well, it says it will ship in a matter of months.
Well,
yes, and also DJ Co, who apparently is CEO of Samsung's mobile business, DJing didn't turn out too good. it's either DJ Co or DJ KO. I think it's Co. But DJ Knockout would be a great name for a DJ. He has apparently once again stressed that the foldable phone wouldn't be a gimmick product that would disappear after 6 to 9 months after it's delivered. I don't know. This is just stewing in the Amazon Fire Phone kind of soup, as far as I'm concerned.
I will take the other side of that bet, DJ Co. I have to tell you.
He said, when we deliver a foldable phone, it has to be really meaningful to our customers, which is a great statement because, you know, generally companies want to ship products that are not meaningful to their customers.
people have been talking about foldable screen technology for years, and they're, I do feel like there are uses for it. In particular, I would very much like a 10-inch laptop which has a 16-inch screen when I want it, right? That would be dead handy. So you don't have this tiny little laptop, but it's not huge to carry around in your bag and so on. That would be cool. But this, it just seems like they've gone, okay, we've built incredible foldable screen technology using the magnificent material science. What can we do with it? And the best thing they could come up with was to get a tablet that folds in half and then bolt a phone on the outside of it. It's just because I assumed at first that the screen, when you folded it, the screen was on the outside. So it was like the Samsung Edge, where the screen went around the edge, but then it would go round to the back. But it doesn't. It just folds on the inside.
But then there's another screen on the outside.
Yeah, but why do you want this?
And they've made I enjoyed. Let me see if I can pull it up in the piece.
I was really hoping that the first foldable screen that shipped was going to be the Slap Band Aerobics, just because I would be nervous.
So apparently, the cover
most
display
skeptical about this device.
Right. The apparently, according to Samsung. This is the most perfect way of saying the screen on the outside is a bit shit. They said, compared to the main display, the experience... they're talking about the outside screen. Compared to the main display, the experience is more optimized for focused and handy quick access and interaction to leverage the small screen.
Yeah.
And it's like, this screen's crap. It's basically a useless screen. And the thing is, so you basically, from what I understand, you have to open it and fold it open most of the time to be able to get a nice screen.
They're going to hold all the useful features to ransom and not make them work on the outside screen. You know, because it's not going to be fully functional. Exactly, as you say, it's going to be it's like a smartwatch or something where you can see notifications on it, but you can't control stuff from it properly and so on.
So I look forward to the notification that says, to answer your phone, open screen.
What amazes me is that he stood there and said, this is not going to be a gimmick. And this is the most gimmicky device I've ever heard of.
Oh, man, you have not seen enough gimmicky devices. Just watch some of the phones and Unbox Therapy.
Yeah.
I was watching one the other day of this phone that's got a solar panel attached to it. And
okay.
And apparently it takes like 18 hours in like blazing direct sunlight to charge the damn thing. And it's like $4,000 or whatever it is.
So that's something that I could see being useful someday. Today is not that day, clearly. But if you could just charge your phone by going like this, it'd be fantastic.
I certainly remember
solar-powered devices. Yeah,
When we were kids, solar-powered calculators came in, and then suddenly you never had to change the battery in your calculator ever. It just never would have occurred to me to do so, because it had a solar panel on it. Brilliant. But yeah, phones, not quite like that, I think.
I think phones are a bit more powerful than calculators from the 80s. Last time I checked.
Oh,
so, yeah, I don't know. This does seem gimmicky, and we'll have to revisit how long this device lasts. But honestly, speaking personally, I'm always wrong about this stuff. I remember when the iPad came out, and I remember saying something to, oh, God, who's that tech journalist guy? I forget his name.
There's more than one, so we'll probably need more information to get.
Like from the, you know, like from the 90s, you'd just constantly travel around with big headphones on and interview people. We worked at Rackspace for a while. You know the guy I'm talking about?
No, I was going to guess Walt Mossberg, but he did not work at Rackspace.
No, anyway, whatever. But he posted this picture of him being the first person to get an iPad when it first came out, and coming out of a Apple store in Palo Alto or something like that, holding this box high in the air, and everyone surrounding him clapping. And I retweeted his tweet out, and I said, "Really, is this what we have become?" And he was like, "This is going to change the face of technology," and he was right, and I was very much wrong. So you never know; this might be a good thing. Who knows?
Now I'm curious who this was. Gruber, maybe.
No, I can't believe him. He's like one of the most well-known. Ah, oh, God. I think he was on the screensavers for a while. It's not Leo Laporte.
Cringely?
What's his name? Not Robert X. Cringely? good grief. Wow. That's a blast from the past.
You said you did this in like 2006 or something. I think you still got caught.
Oh, hang on. Robert Scoble. So, yeah, that guy. Okay. Anyway. Do we want to pour any more acid on this story, or should we move on?
No, we'll move on, I think. We are fine with that now.
All right. Give us something else. What's next?
Well, one of the things, this is something John, I mentioned, but it ties in something that we talked about. Phone companies, this is in the US, are apparently being slammed by the FCC for not doing more to handle robocalls. Now, we had a conversation, Jeremy and I, about this a couple of shows ago, about the number of spam calls having gone up to something like 50% of all calls or something ridiculous. And so we said to people, is this the case for you, or is it just that Jeremy's particularly unlucky? And the answer is, it turns out Jeremy is not particularly unlucky, and it's happening to basically everyone in the US.
Yeah, I get loads of them.
The FCC have said it's their top consumer priority to fix it and so on, but what can you do to fix it?
You mean consumers or FCC?
The FCC. I mean, they talk about call authentication, but I didn't have a lot of luck finding out what that is, and I just don't trust Ajit Pai about anything anymore. So, what are they proposing happens?
I think they've just said to mobile providers, just go and figure this out, from what I understand from the story. I don't think they've asked them to do anything in particular. I might be wrong on this. On a related note, you know, the Google Pixel comes with this call screening feature. Have you seen this?
I've seen call screening. No. Describe it.
Your silence is.
Describe what the Pixel does.
So basically, what happens? This happened to me yesterday twice. I got phone rings, and it's a red screen. It says, you know, scam call likely.
Yeah.
And then you can either press the button to answer the phone, the button to hang up, or there's another button that says screen. And what it does is it basically runs Google Assistant on the phone, and it will answer the phone, and it will say, "Hi, this is the Google Assistant, and, you know, I'm a screen, you know, call screen," or some shit like that. And it'll basically, "What are you calling about?"
What?
And then the person can respond, and it shows prompts based upon their response that you can tell Google Assistant to respond to. So I was sat in a meeting, and it came through, so I screened the call, and then the person hung up immediately. It was obviously a robocall or a, you know, marketing call. But I tested it out with Erica, and she called, and it would interpret her responses, and then you could respond using Google Assistant. It's brilliant, and it all runs locally from the phone. Like, none of this goes back to Google. So
still do not like conceptually.
You don't like it?
No.
Why?
I don't like the optics of it.
You should never be a judge.
I don't want a computer answering my phone.
Yeah, I mean, we did go into this quite a bit when we talked about the Google Duplex. But
Duplex?
I can see some use in this. I mean, part of the problem with this is that it will not take people doing this kind of spam call marketing very long to work out how to say things to the Google Assistant that will make it sound like a legit call that you want to pick up, at which point we're in an arms race. And I'm not sure I want to be the ground on which this arms race is being fought. You're in an arms race. I'm not. I don't get 50% of my calls being spam.
Yeah, but right. So to go back to your original question of how can we combat this, I think the answer is probably twofold, like anything, and it's so to go back to the call authentication technology, what that really is.
By the way, Samsung, twofold. Carry on.
Boom! I didn't even mean that one. that one's free. The next one I'm gonna bill for. So the call authentication technology is really a way to digitally sign and validate calls. So right now, at least in the U.S., what I notice a lot is my area code and my three-digit exchange are what they spoof. For some reason, they think I'm more likely to answer if the first six digits are the same, which now I've noticed if it's the first six digits, I immediately don't answer. But so this would digitally sign and then validate the source of the incoming call so that you couldn't spoof call numbers in the way that you can now. That's my understanding of call authentication technology. So I think it's going to be just like with spam, a mix of technological changes and cultural changes, maybe including some regulation to stop it. But I think the one thing that I really do like about, and I think this might only be on Pixels and the Essential, I think they're rolling it out to a Android more broadly soon, but because I have one of those two phones, I don't know, is the detection, like you said, the spam call likely or scammer likely. That is right.
Yeah.
85-ish% of the time. Yeah. And there's a setting where you can,
almost always right,
if there's a high enough confidence, just send it right to voicemail without even ringing your phone, which I use. It has never been wrong once. And I think the real impetus for these things to stop, and this is the same with spam email, is the day it's not profitable for the people doing the spamming is the day it stops. So making it not profitable really, I think, is the end game.
I mean, Jono, I take your point that I just haven't got there yet. But the thing I didn't understand about call authentication is it seems to be avoiding people spoofing call numbers. But the spam calls I do get aren't from fake numbers or anything. They aren't spoofed. So call authentication will stop that. But I don't see what stops them just ringing you up anyway. Or is the point that they're spoofing the call numbers to avoid being trapped by the big red screen, this is a spam call thing?
Well, they're spoofing it, I think, for multiple reasons. One, they can just cycle through numbers to get around that. But two, if you see a call from Birmingham, I think in their mind, you're more likely to answer.
Right.
So I think it's them not understanding how people process information. But
right. So the call authentication technology will lock you to a specific number, and then the spam list identifies the numbers that regularly send spam and then tell you about it. And so the two things go hand in hand. Right, that's the bit I didn't understand, because I thought, what do I care that it authenticates the number? Because it's not like you can say, only restrict my incoming calls to authenticated numbers only, otherwise my brother can't ring me up, because he's not going to apply for it, right?
Right. No, that wasn't the intention, to my understanding.
Right. That was what I didn't understand. I mean, I went and read about it a bit, but there's a thing called Stir and a thing called Shaken, but I don't really get... There seems to be very clever technology designed to tie you to a specific phone number and stop you lying about it. I just didn't understand how that helped, but now I understand how it helps. Thank you.
I have a solution for all of these problems. Are you ready to hear the genius?
Is the genius never make phone calls and just use the internet for everything?
No, that will be the Stuart Langridge approach.
No, it's not mine. I'm fine with phone calls, but I know quite a few people who have said, wow, I got a phone call today for the first time in 2 months or something, and I didn't like taking it. And I went, well, I still use my phone to actually phone people up quite a lot. I was quite surprised.
Are those people living in caves?
No, they're living in Wolverhampton residents. No, they're living in London. That's the point.
God, what's happening? This is the solution. And this gets exactly to Jeremy's point about if you hit their bottom line, they'll stop doing it. I think that what, and this is something that Google, I think, can do, and Facebook can do, other purveyors of information. Like, you use Google to find businesses, to find things. I think Yelp could do this. But I think there should be some kind of initiative where when you, for example, look at a business on Yelp or you look at a business on Google or something along those lines, there is the equivalent of, I don't know if you're familiar with this act, but there's something in the US called the Better Business Bureau. And essentially, they're a relatively objective organization that will give businesses a grading based upon customer service and various other things. Like, they'll track how many complaints have been filed and how they're resolved. And a lot of consumers in the US really trust the Better Business Bureau ratings quite a bit, particularly if you're buying something from somewhere that you're not familiar with. If you're buying a pair of sunglasses from some, you know, 1-800-sunglasses.com or something like that, then you'll look at that rating. So I think what you should do is there should be some kind of marketing scorecard more broadly, or even just simply something like robocall scorecard that basically says, if this company is aggressively spamming or engaging in robocalls, then it's highlighted on their record on Google or Facebook or wherever else. Or if you want to be even more aggressive, it could even potentially ding their search results. Because I think if a company was to find out, holy shit, this is impacting my Google, Facebook, Yelp, like, positioning, they'll stop doing it right away. Because they're probably going to get more business through those search listings than through the robocall, you know, people engaging with robocalls. That, to me, is how you do it. I don't think the solution needs to be delivered necessarily. Yeah, things like the Pixel thing is great, but to me, that's just coming up with a better Band-Aid. It's not actually fixing the underlying disease. And the underlying disease, to Jeremy's point, I think you've got to get to the bottom line. So
that seems reasonable. I mean, this to me feels like the sort
of consequences.
Thing, yeah, I mean, this to me feels like the sort of thing where it ought to be the government's job to solve it rather than some random private business. But it'll work, so fair play. It'd be interesting to see how political parties are affected by it.
Why, out of curiosity, why do you think it should be the government's job to solve this?
Because the telephone network's a public service. It may not be in the States.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Not really. It might be technically, but it's not really.
Which is the best kind of correct, as we all know.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Right, next item, Mr. Bacon.
Shall we go to it?
Jeremy, do you have anything, or do you want me to go?
Yeah, no. Did you see that Motorola became the first smartphone company to sell DIY repair kits? And they're actually, I think, even more interestingly than just selling it, they're partnering with iFixit to sell them directly through the site for, like, the Moto X, the G4, the G5, a couple other phones. So I think it's really interesting. I think some of the Motorola phones are compelling. I just, for whatever reason, when I go to buy a new phone, don't think of Motorola. So my question to you both is, did you see this? Do you think it's interesting? Any comments? But B, is it more likely to make you buy a Motorola?
I still think of Motorola as a pager company.
I mean, I will say the inflection point for me on Motorola would Jono, you and I were set in a bar for a conference, and I honestly don't remember which one, where that guy kept throwing his phone in the air.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
All things open,
so,
yeah.
Oh, was it All Things Open? So Motorola evidently makes a indestructible phone, and he was legitimately chucking his phone, I would say, 15, 20 feet in the air.
Yeah.
Repeatedly.
Throwing it at the floor, which was a stone floor.
Yeah. And it didn't
have a
scratch.
We were like, what is happening right now?
So they're clearly doing cool things. I just, like I said, the Motorolas I've owned in the past, I really liked. Just haven't bought one recently, but...
And people were very keen on, I think it was the G5, which seemed to be really good example of a stock Android phone which did everything you wanted to do and did it well and didn't have loads of stupid extra bolt-ons and wasn't expensive. It was a mid-class phone that was really good. The Motorola people, I think, must be quite frustrated that, when you say Motorola to people, they think of the Motorola Razr. And, so I don't know. And it's good to see them attempting to do things which reach out to different communities. And this is one of them. I mean, honestly, I've never had to DIY repair any of my phones, but I've assumed that's just because doing such a thing is beyond my capabilities. But maybe actually it isn't. It never would have occurred to me that you're even allowed to. I mean, I just assume a phone is a sealed box of technology that I'm not permitted to touch. So maybe it isn't.
Without sounding like a horrible snobbish bastard, which I'm obviously going to right now, I've said that.
I have my butler fix my phone when it breaks.
I'm of the view that if those guys in shopping malls who have stuff on the carts in between the shops are able to fix your phone, I'm pretty sure that you're able to fix your phone.
My entire experience with people like that was, do you remember when there were, now all SIM cards are nano SIMs, right? But you remember that there were for a while, there were mini SIMs, sort of in between the size of a full-size SIM card and the nano SIM.
Yeah. Yep.
And I had a mini SIM in whichever phone it was that I had, I can't remember. And then I got a new phone, it needed a nano SIM. And the people it was T-Mobile I was with at the time, and the people in the T-Mobile shop said, okay, so you need to get a new SIM, and they wanted to charge me £15 or something. And I thought, hang on, I'm sure
can't
one
you just
of those...
cut it?
Well, yeah. this was the thing. But I thought,
they
you know,
I'm,
I, yeah, I didn't want to cut it with, you know, a Stanley knife or whatever. So I, you know, scissors or my own fingernails or something. So I went to one of those little stall things, and he said, yeah, okay. And then he got out basically the equivalent of a hole punch and put my SIM card in it. And then you pull the lever down and it cuts it down to the right size, because he's just cutting the plastic around the chip rather than the chip. And what he did was he cut down and just cut right through the middle of the SIM card. And he'd maybe pay a fiver up front and said this might not work. At which point I then had to go back to T-Mobile and spend the £15 anyway. So I was furious, and I haven't been to another one of those shops since.
Another story I will retell in perpetuity from your life.
Adventures in phone shopping. So, yes,
your misery
mistrustful.
Delights us.
I am mistrustful of these sorts of shops. On the other hand, if what you want is a hard plastic case with fake diamonds on the back, they are all there for you. Every one of these shops, as I understand it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I actually had I bought a G5 as a burner phone for when I had to go to China a few times, and then when I when my Google Pixel
when I what? Said I was thinking of doing that, you were super abusive about it.
Doing what?
Buying a burner phone to go to other countries.
Yeah, but you were going to like France or somewhere.
I was going to America. I'm not worried about going to France.
Oh, America!
Until
yeah,
March.
You were worried. Well, wasn't it? Now, this was the thing where you were worried about people the TSA making them tell you your Twitter password.
Well, it seems like you were worried about the Chinese TSA doing exactly the same thing, right?
Not really. I was worried primarily about the well-documented snooping on visitors and citizens by the Chinese government. That's the reason why.
We would now pause for 10 seconds or so while everyone listening to this show starts composing their email going, the Americans do that too, you know.
I would argue that it's a little different. The Americans, keep it secret.
So anyway, I
got a G5. I think it was a G5.
Yeah.
And then when my Pixel met its fateful end at the bottom of that toilet bowl, I switched to it until the Google Pixel 3 came out. And it's a really stellar little phone. I bought it a couple of years ago. And it's got almost stock Android.
Great.
And it was, yeah, really good.
So this is kind of disappointing, in that it seems like it's impossible if you're not Samsung or Apple to actually make a phone. Because I think HTC phones are great, and it sounds like Motorola phones are great. They have, like, no market at all.
No.
That's disappointing.
No. It is disappointing.
They are, Samsung and Apple are basically the only people who make money on phones now. Everyone else is nowhere. They've got basically the whole market between the two of them.
And Samsung phones are just, I just think they're awful. And it's the software, the hardware is really nice. I think the software is awful.
And that's the thing, they're doing a lot of, they're trying to differentiate with software quite a bit. I mean, this came up with the foldable phone thing, but they're pushing a lot of, well, they look like Samsung-specific services, but that's only because we think of the Google stuff as the normality. You've got things like Bixby, which is their assistant slash Amazon device, which I'm not going to say out loud, slash Cortana. and they're pushing that kind of thing. And it sounds, you know, you sort of think, oh, well, why are they doing this? But that's because you think of the Google one as being normality and why would people change it? And Samsung don't want that, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what led to things like them creating Barda and Tizen and stuff like that. They are pretty determined that they're not just going to be a Google reseller. And much as none of us like their stuff, it's obviously working.
Well, and this is why I think their foldable phone, without going back to that too much, is a bit of a a risk, because I think that their audience, but as a general rule, are non-technical consumers, right? So they just want a phone that has reasonable battery life with the four or five apps that they need, and is just dependable, right? And is easy to use. I think the idea of like these gimmicky things, much as they say they aren't, around foldable screens or even the edge thing that they've had, I don't think most of their consumers really care about that. They just care about having a cheap, like, easy to use device.
The problem with that, of course,
is while you can make a ton of money. Yeah, but is it useful? Is the edge bit useful? I don't know if it is.
No, but then
I could see it being useful, but the fact that it's a separate Samsung only API means that very few apps actually support it that aren't Samsung apps, which makes it useful.
Right. And I think a lot of people, they just want the bare bones of what a phone is. They want performance, right, to be better. But, for example, like on the Pixel, there's the whole thing where you can squeeze the edge of the phone to call up Google Assistant. I don't know anyone who uses that. I mean, some people listening to this may do, but I immediately disabled that. Because, like, why would I do that? I just unlock my phone and press the button.
I think they're trying
to innovate.
Once you've hired, 10,000 hardware engineers, they're going to keep inventing stuff, even if you don't want them to. Although, to be honest with you, all stuff like that looks pointless until the one thing that gets adopted, and then suddenly it's amazing and you don't understand why everyone doesn't have it. So chucking loads of random hardware stuff at the wall in the hope that something sticks, especially if you've got all the money in the universe like Samsung has.
Yeah.
It's probably the thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Next item.
Let's see. All right, here's one. So Microsoft's president, Brad Smith, was at the Web Summit, I think it was, recently, doing a fireside waffle with Tony Blair, previous prime minister from the great nation of the United Kingdom, or England. And he basically said that we need to regulate facial recognition technology before the year 2024 looks like the book 1984. Now, to expand on that, he basically said, and I'm quoting him, he said, "For the first time, the world is on the threshold of technology that would give a government the ability to follow anyone anywhere and everyone everywhere. It could know exactly where you were going, where you have been, and where you were yesterday as well. And this has profound potential ramifications for even just the fundamental civil liberties on which democratic societies rely. Before we wake up and find that the year 2024 looks like the book 1984, let's figure out what kind of world we want to create and what are the safeguards and what are the limitations of both companies and governments for the use of this technology." That sounds like you could apply that paragraph, I think, to so many technologies, not just facial recognition.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. But
what do you guys think? Do you think we should have some form of regulation around it? And how would that look? Because facial recognition on your iPhone is very different to facial recognition used in law enforcement.
Yeah.
We've talked about this a bit in the past about misuse of technology and so on. I mean, it came up with the Google Duplex thing, among other things. But what I'd like to see happen, and we talked about this on the forums on community.badvoltage.org, that if you're a company and you're putting together some kind of new technology thing, There ought to be a line item somewhere on your feasibility study of what bad uses could this be put to, even if it isn't us who do it. And then you think, okay, are those bad uses something that we want to make happen? And just even have that discussion, which I don't think happens at all. Because, I mean, the historically, this has always been a the scientist's ultimate get-out clause. You go, we just do neutral scientific inquiry. What use it's put to is nothing to do with us. Discoveries are just out there to be discovered. It's someone else's problem. But I'm starting to think that I don't like that argument as much as I used to.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
Exactly because I think unleashing something potentially damaging on the world and then just washing your hands of it and going, nothing to do with me, seems reckless. I'm not sure what can be done about it. I certainly don't think that government regulation of what scientists are allowed to investigate is the answer here either, to be clear. But
right.
Some more awareness of the use of the thing that you're building would be good. I'd like to see.
But what does that look like in practical terms?
I was going to say,
like,
you're assuming like then that no one else will build it, though, which doesn't seem like how the world operates.
Nah, but again, this has always been the thing. Well, you know, we could work on this. Let's make, I don't know, nuclear bombs the size of a pea or something. But we're not going to, because if we don't invent it, someone else will do it anyway, so we might as well do it. I'm not sold on that as an argument, to be honest with you. And
so using the facial recognition that we're talking about, you don't think if one company does it, another one won't?
Take this as an example, right? So, yeah, facial recognition, as you say, if people are doing lots of research into how to recognize a face when it's held up close to your phone, that is obviously to some extent generalizable to the idea of picking out faces in a crowd, right? Mm-hmm. And there is going to be some crossover, right? All this stuff is sort of interrelated and it's using similar-ish algorithms. But that's not the same thing at all as someone saying, well, we're going to deliberately invent the technology that allows us to pick faces out of a crowd so that we can identify people and sell them trainers. Right? Without saying, well, if we build that, what uses could it be put to other than this? And I think, as I say, I think the idea of going, well, someone else could use it for bad things, but that doesn't matter because we'll make profit and that's all we're here to do on our specific thing, feels a bit reckless to me, in the same way that you could make the same argument about things like environmentalism, right? If you're building something and you dump a load of crap into a river, you go, well, if we weren't going to do that, someone else is going to anyway. Everyone's a polluter. We need to make money. But there's actually an overall, I don't know what you'd call it, a feeling, a zeitgeist about how you shouldn't do that, even if it benefits you. And some of that is done via government regulation and the EPA in the US and so on. But some more of it is just general awareness that this sort of thing is not the right thing to do. You know, the seesaw tipped a little bit away from the 60s and 70s when that was fine. And I'd like to see this sort of technological research being treated like, or the potential bad effects of it being treated like damaging, polluting waste products from industrial processes. Sometimes you do a process and it has these and you think about it and you decide, you know what? Okay, we're prepared to do that. But people at least have the discussion. Whereas I don't think that comes up with technological research at all. It's, you don't need to discuss bad things because we're not going to do any bad things and therefore it's not our problem. Is what I think. I'm fully formed this thought, to be clear.
I get what you're saying, but it sounds like what you're basically saying is be excellent to each other, right? You're saying that human beings have got the ability to produce and create new inventions, and then they should think responsibly about how that is applied in society. And I think that's a nice idea, but I think it's a bit of a pipe dream, because you're always going to get some shithead who's going to try and apply it in a place that is socially irresponsible. You're going to get the Martin Shkreli guy.
Right. Yeah, totally. And
I think it would be a better world, but it is a little bit naive. But I think That sums you up very well. As if it was up to you, this would be a better place. But
that's not quite what I do take your point. Yes, there's a certain amount of naivety in this. But I think much as there is the occasional bad actor who will go, okay, I've worked out a way to make replacements for plastic straws out of trees, right, which looks good for people and solves problems. But as a byproduct, it produces loads of cadmium, which we're going to throw into a river, right? If you come up with that idea in 1965, the bloke would have gone, well, the cadmium's not my problem, what the hell, and just done it. Now, yeah, people wouldn't do that because the optics of doing that would be bad. I think the world genuinely has changed. Yes, there will be some people who would have done it then and who would do it today. And that's what your government regulation is there for, right? To actually find people who willfully do this, despite knowing that it's damaging, and do it anyway, and then punish them. But what I want to happen is for the zeitgeist to change, for people's general attitudes. And attitudinal change is possible, right? It's just going, oh, well, there's always going to be bad actors and therefore we might as well not do anything, to me is an utter counsel of despair. We can be better than that without being too naive, I think.
I don't think that's what we're saying, though. I don't think that's what we're saying, but I think what we're... Jeremy and I don't want to put words into Jeremy's mouth, but I think what we're saying is if you want to change that zeitgeist, there's got to be something more concrete than hoping that it changes, right?
I agree.
Like a good example of this, I would say a good example of this is what we're starting to see with digital well-being.
And,
we're starting to see phones shipping that kind of stuff and people talking about being more present and reducing screen time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing. But what's changing that, I think, is that companies are seeing that as a market opportunity, and then that's changing the norms of how society tends to operate. So to me, if we're going to have a way in which technology is more responsibly applied, the market's got to basically support that responsibility, in my mind. That's the reason why I think government regulation will only get you so far.
Yeah, I agree completely, right? Because on that. I mean, there should not be government regulation to ensure digital wellness, right? That would be utterly the wrong approach. And this is exactly the same. I completely agree with you. There needs to be enlightened self-interest in this. But I think this is something companies could essentially trade on, make part of their public image, that we could have done this, but we didn't, exactly because we think there are damaging uses to it. I mean, I don't have the
detail.
So you
basically
of how that
want
happens,
all, you basically want all companies to be B corporations,
right?
I might do. What's that?
So I think it's B corp, like what Ben and Jerry's did, where corporate good is actually instilled into their fiduciary duties.
Yes.
So they can make decisions based on general goodness, but have it still, even if it costs more, they can justify that to their stockholders by saying that's part of our corporate structure.
Not only do I want that to happen, that's the sort of thing I would be firmly in favor of government regulation ensuring. That sounds like a brilliant idea to me. Utterly in favour of that. I'd not heard of that, and that's a great idea. Two big thumbs up from the language on that particular point.
Yeah, it's like a benefit corporation, I think it is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't know
like
about that.
Kickstarter's
we'll,
one.
We'll yep. look into yep. those. Hooray. Here are the two big thumbs
data
up.
Data.world. Mycroft, I think Mycroft is changing to be a B Corp. So.
Wow. Oh, cool.
I'm seeing more and more of it happening.
That's exactly the kind of thing. We're starting to see people, you know, the mood changing to where that is in itself a desirable thing to do. And eventually the seesaw tips over the point was like, why are you not a B Corporation, random company? That seems weird. And that's an example of what John and I was talking about with the zeitgeist changing. Yeah, I'm totally in favour of that. That sounds great. Let's make that happen.
It's tricky that going back to the facial recognition piece, though.
Don't go back to the point. It's about philosophy.
I'm in two minds about this because I'm in like 90 different minds about this because I think that he's raising a good point when he says that these kinds of technologies can be dangerous, right? Like, I would apply the same argument towards 3D printed weapons, right?
Yeah, which we have discussed on the show.
Right. So, and by the way, did you see the guy that runs that 3D printing weapon company got busted for having sex with an underage girl?
No.
Yeah, and he ran off to Thailand, I think it was, and then got arrested. Yeah. Oh, I think the guy's going down. So, but anyway, you know, this is where I'm in two minds, because I can understand from the perspective of, for example, a gun rights enthusiast, someone who is a very safe user, keeper and user of firearms, that they would love to be able to print their own guns and participate in a collaborative community around that and have fun. But then there's also, of course, the risk that some nut job is going to go and shoot a bunch of people by printing their own guns, or it's going to get into the hands of kids or whatever else. And I think there is something very similar with facial recognition in a way. And I don't think that government regulation is, as we've seen in the past, is necessarily a way in which you can control this kind of stuff. Like, it reminds me of file sharing. Like, do you remember all the hullabaloo back then when Napster was a thing? And it's like, you can't control this. Like, there's only so much that you can do. And even if you can control it, the government works way slower than technology companies do. So while it's not being regulated, you're already going to have like 60 startups who are going to be selling facial recognition services.
Smith wasn't recommending government regulation specifically. He was saying we need to look at this technology and technologies like it, work out whether we want to live in the kind of world that could be placed upon us by these technologies existing, and then decide what we want to do about it. He's not recommending that regulation is the solution.
I agree.
He would probably agree with you that the way to do this is to change people's attitudes to what this sort of thing, and therefore talking about it and having inspiring people to have this kind of conversation is exactly what he wants, which is great.
I agree, but what he said was waffly, the bit that I shared. Like, it was like saying, I want people to be nicer to each other. I'm just thinking about, like, how do you pragmatically do that? Government regulation is one approach. The tricky thing here is that I think that facial recognition is a good example of this. On one hand, yes, it is a technology that you could, for example, use to essentially stalk someone, right, in some capacity, right? You could use it in a malicious manner. But then it's also got the very useful application of unlocking your phone. So I don't think there's many of these technologies that are only nefarious in nature.
Agreed. And that's the point.
I mean, right. look at BitTorrent as an example. Like, huge valuable...
Yeah.
Hugely valuable application with BitTorrent, but people use it for pirating movies.
But that's why there is a discussion about it. Technologies which are wholly and only nefarious, you don't have a discussion, you just ban them, right? Which is why you can't go and buy plutonium in Kmart. It's...
Right.
But no. this is the point of the
Gatorade
discussion.
Is what it's called.
but it's an interesting point, and it's the underlying point behind this is something we've come back to again and again and again on the show, and legitimately so. It's this might be the discussion of our time, really. You know, what are we doing with technology, and where do we want to go with it?
I don't know. I think the question of who let the dogs out is a consistently more of a question. We should probably think about wrapping it up.
Yeah. We should. Although I will point out that I did see one guy on Twitter. I can't remember who it was. I'll see if I can dig it up for the show notes, but I bet I can't find it now. Who said, he just tweeted, "Okay, I admit it. It was me. I let the dogs out." One of those things
Erica,
where you think, oh, which
Erica
I
saw a car
that.
Sticker like that. It was me.
Yes.
Nice. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Sorry, this show is a little off schedule. It's because I'll be in the UK next week with Mr. Langridge, in fact. And we'll talk to you very soon, in fact, probably with more news and analysis. We'll be right back.